Narottam Das Thakur Ki
Jai.
So Prabhus, we'll speak about Shikshashtakam for the next few days, if you can tolerate me. And today we'll just go with verse number 1 and maybe verse number 2. Is that okay? We'll end at 8, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So those of us who know the verse by heart, let us sing it together. Cheto darpana marjanam bhavamahadavagni nirvapanam shreya kairava chandrika vitaranam vidyavadu jivanam anandam buddhivardhanam pratipadam purnam vitasvadanam sarvatma snapanam param vijayate shri krishna samkirtanam. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur used to say there should be one motto of the Gaudiya Math, and that is Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. My relationship with the Shikshashtakam began when I was a new bhakta in the Los Angeles ISKCON temple. One traveling Sankirtan party came through when I was just in the temple for like a month or two. And they were distributing Srila Prabhupada's books at different concerts, different rock concerts. So we had them stay in the Brahmacharya Ashram, and so in the room where I was in, one of them stayed with us. I forget his name, he was from Israel, a Jewish devotee, who was already initiated, he was a little bit more senior to me. And I'll always remember, like, in one morning he put on, you know, his gamsha to go take a shower, and as he was taking a shower, I would hear him. I heard him, you know, and I told him, after you recite the Shikshashtakam every day? In the shower? He says, yes, I do it every day in the shower. And then I felt like, okay, I want to do this. I want to do this also. So I remember before Guru Puja every day, morning, you know, we would chant our rounds before Guru Puja, and then so between like 5, maybe 10, 15 minutes before the Darshan Arti, I remember I was in Cheta Darpanam, I was memorizing the Shikshashtakam, and then I started chanting it in the shower, you know, for years, and it's still something I do most of the time now. Because when you think about it, like Prabhupada said also, like, you can say anything, but what you put in writing, that's important, correct? So Lord Chaitanya, who is our everything, didn't write anything except Shikshashtakam. All his teachings were through the six Goswamis and through different associates of Lord Chaitanya, but he wrote 8 verses. So how important are those 8 verses that God himself wrote? You know, we believe God himself. So they contain really the essence of our philosophy. And so for us, who are followers of Lord Chaitanya, it's important for us to meditate on these verses and to know them and to bathe our consciousness in them. Mm-hmm. So this first verse establishes many things, and we'll go through it together. This first thing, Cheto Darpana Marjanam. What does Chitta mean in this context?
Consciousness,
the heart. And Darpana? That's more Marjanam. Darpana is a mirror, right? Cheto Darpana Marjanam. So that's the first thing we learn. The first thing Lord Chaitanya teaches us is that this chanting, this Sankirtan, this congregational chanting of the holy name of Krishna cleanses the mirror of our heart, cleanses our consciousness. Cheto darpana marjanam. So Krishna consciousness is a process of purification, of cleaning. And who does the cleaning? Krishna himself. And why does he do the cleaning? Because we want him to. Otherwise he doesn't. Like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ye yata mam prabhavyante tam sataiva bhajamyaham. As one surrenders unto me, as one takes shelter of me, I reward him accordingly. And similarly, in the 10th chapter, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam enama upayanti te. To those who are devoted to serving me with love, I give them the understanding, the divya gyan, by which they can come to me. And in the next verse, Tesham eva nukampartam mahamagyana chantamaha, from within their heart, right? From within their heart, I destroy the ignorance. Right? The ignorance. So basically, Krishna in our heart cleanses, you know, the ignorance that has encrusted itself on us as souls since anadi, since time immemorial, we hear. Now we've been roaming around in this reincarnation cycle, according to our texts, for a long, 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 long time. And every lifetime, it's like compounded, you know. Our material desires, our ignorance, our false identification with this body just gets compounded more and more and more. And so there needs to be like, do you have Ajax? Yep, Ajax is kind of a planetary cleaning agent. Ajax? Huh? Or Mr. Clean? Do you have a brand called Mr. Clean? So it's like kind of like Paramatma is kind of like Mr. Clean in our heart. You know, he cleanses away. He cleanses away our desires to be the enjoyers, independent of God. There's a nice Christian saying to live, you know, according to not enjoy, but to live in the plan of God. Yeah, I think that's nice. It's kind of what we want to do. But not with selfish, self-destructive desires, which ultimately make us unhappy. Right. So, cetodarpanam arjanam, if we just patiently chant every day our rounds, and also do kirtan, like Rupa Goswami suggests in Nectar of Instruction, and then we can be confident that slowly but surely Krishna will follow his promise in the Bhagavad Gita, that he will purify us from within, and what's left is, you know, this again, this pure love of God that we are all supposedly naturally inheritors of. Chetudapanam arjanam. All glories to the Sri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years and extinguishes the fire of conditional life. The fire of conditional life. Material existence is described like a fire. We're like burning in this fire. A fire of repeated birth and death. Krishna says, Abrahma bhuvanar loka punar avartanor jana. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all our places of suffering, wherein repeated birth and death takes place. So it's a pretty bleak picture of the material world. Enough to kind of get you depressed. But hopefully enough also to make you think, okay, well, wait a second, how can I live in this world in the best possible way? Right? How can I live in this temporary existence in the best possible way, even materially? And even Krishna talks about living in sattva-guna as the higher quality of life. And how can I act and change my consciousness in such a way that when I leave this body, I don't have to take birth again? So all glories to the Sri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years and extinguishes the fire of conditional life, of repeated birth and death. This Sankirtan movement is the prime benediction for humanity at large. It's hard not to become arrogant and to become proud, but we can and should believe that spreading the Sankirtan movement, spreading Sankirtan is the greatest benediction to humanity. I think Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was talking about how saving even one soul from, you know, repeated birth and death is better than opening millions of hospitals. I don't know now so much, but I remember I would hear that in the 1970s, at the beginning of ISKCON, in the United States at least, and I'm sure in Europe also, people would criticize devotees, because most devotees then were living as monks and nuns in temples. There was no large congregation as it is now. And so people would criticize, you know, why don't you get a job, you know, do something with your life, right? When the devotees were preaching or distributing literature, you know, get a job, get a life, do something. But we believe that actually, you know, trying our little bit to help other souls become lucky and get the mercy of Krishna, there's no greater thing that anyone can do. Because we're helping to solve somebody's problems forever, right? As long as someone is incarnated in a material body, we're stuck with problems. We have to. If anything, you know, birth, which is a problem, we understand. Death is definitely not welcoming, and old age and disease. I'm starting to get some, yeah, I'm 45, so, you know, not like I don't have a young 20-year-old body anymore. And I'm starting to feel the old age thing. Hi, hello. And that also, Hare Krishna. So what's the use of, we understand, you know, I mean, we hear this analogy of polishing the cage of the bird and not feeding the bird, right? Now, we don't take also the extreme stance and say there should be no hospitals, there should be no schools, there should be no universities, you know, it's all Maya. No. Remember, Sri Shopanishad, verse 8 or 11, talks about how one should cultivate transcendence and ignorance or material knowledge side by side. A great example of this is the Bhaktivedanta Hospital in Bombay. Right? It's a wonderful example of how the Vaishnavas don't reject the material world, they just transform it in Krishna's service. Who hasn't heard of the Bhaktivedanta Hospital in Bombay? You haven't? Okay. They're all disciples of, mostly of Radhanath Maharaj, but it doesn't matter. They're all Vaishnavas, and they're all doctors, and they all got together and built like a 7-story huge hospital, which they call the Bhaktivedanta Hospital. And all the nurses have tilak. Everyone who comes to work has to offer their obeisances to Prabhupada and do a Guru Puja at 7 in the morning before all the activities take place. You know, the patients in each room has like 3 channels to choose from the radio. One, you know, Prabhupada Mahamantra, Prabhupada Bhajan, and maybe some contemporary kirtans. And then someone has a service of like going from door to door with a cart that has Jagannath and Baladev and Subhadra, so that people who are sick, who can't move, you know, get the darshan of Jagannath. The food is all prasadam. Right, that's nice, that's really nice. And actually, apparently, they've made many, many devotees through that hospital. So why am I talking about the hospital? Can someone refresh my mind? Yeah, well, vidya, just before, vidya vadu, it's the benediction upon all. It's a benediction, it's the greatest benediction.
Equally material and spiritual.
Right.
Ignorance and knowledge.
Yes. So I was saying we shouldn't be, you know, just because the spreading of the Sankirtan movement is the greatest benediction for humanity at large, it doesn't mean that we artificially reject the material world or anything in the material world that can and should be used in Krishna's service. This is a really important point. I wish I had been taught this point when I was 20 years old and coming to Krishna consciousness. Philip, recently, this a few hours ago, we went to the book, you know, the book room. And as I entered, I remembered a pastime where when Prabhupada was visiting the BBT in Los Angeles, the warehouse, he said that there should be a poster on top of the door that has the famous verse by Rupa Goswami about Yukta Vairagya. Anasyaktasya vishayan yataraham upayunjata nirbando Krishna sambande yuktam vairagya mucchate. Who's unfamiliar with this verse? Okay. Who hasn't heard of the notion of yukta vairagya? We've heard of it. Okay, who's not familiar with it? So, for those who do know, let's be magnanimous and hear again what this is. The definition of renunciation is different in the bhakti tradition than in other traditions, especially those that are more what we would call the Mayavadi traditions, right? The Mayavadis, the impersonalists, generally, most often, reject matter as illusory. Therefore, there's this famous saying, Jagat Mithya, right? What is it? Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya. That Brahman, or spirit, is Satya, is truth. Of course, they think we are all Brahman, and we are, qualitatively, but we believe we're individual souls, right? God is God, and we are we, but they think we're all one. But anyway, am I speaking too fast, or is it okay? In terms of quality, we're all Brahman, that's what the Mayavadis say, but Jagat, this world, so we have Jagatnath. Jagannath is the Lord of the Jagat, of this universe. Therefore, Prabhupada was angry that why do the pandas, the priests in Jagannath Puri, don't allow American or European Vaishnavas to have darshan of Lord Jagannath. And his argument, it's there in the folio, his argument was, you know, Jagannath is not Puri Nath, or the Lord of Puri. He's the Jagannath, he's the Lord of air, so why don't you allow people from foreign countries to have darshan of Jagannath? So the Mayavadis say Jagat Mithya, this universe, this matter, is illusion. But the Vaishnavas don't see it like that. The Vaishnavas see that matter is an energy, a real energy of a real God. Therefore, it's not illusory. Okay, it's temporary. That's fine. And therefore, sometimes we say it's illusory, but not because it's ontologically illusory, but because it's temporary. It's manifested, unmanifested, manifested, unmanifested. But ontologically, matter is real because it's a real emanation from a real God. So now, how do we then relate to this world? We relate to it, we relate to matter as devotees very differently from the impersonalists. The impersonalists will say, I renounce matter because matter is illusory. The devotee sees that matter is an energy of God, and therefore there's a connection with God. Sambandha. Anasyaktasya vishayan yataram upayunjata nirbando Krishna sambande. Krishna sambande. There's a connection with Krishna. And therefore the duty of the Vaishnava is to see that connection between matter and God and engage matter in God's service. And so practically speaking, that has then have to do with the Krishna's teachings in the Gita that everyone follows his or her nature. I mean, everyone has his or her nature, according to the three modes of nature. And someone has a nature to be a doctor, for example. So instead of renouncing medical science and the profession of being a doctor, the Vaishnava embraces that propensity and spiritualizes it by, for example, working in the Bhaktivedanta hospital. Same thing with money. Like Prabhupada used to joke, you know, when you offer a donation to a Mayavadi sannyasi, he says, you know, it's matter. And you offer a donation to a Vaishnava sannyasi, he takes it with his right hand and then he puts out his left hand, asks for more. Because money is going to be used in Krishna's service. Not that it's, you know, illusion. So that's really, really, really important. And the more I think we teach this to new people who come to Krishna consciousness, the more we'll actually really see this, what Prabhupada talked about, a house in which the whole world can live, right? In other words, a spiritual community, a worldwide spiritual community where everybody who has their own individual karma and conditioning can feel welcome to use that in Krishna's service. Just like Arjuna uses Kshatriya spirit in Krishna's service. And so we see this in this first verse. I mean, I took a big detour about it, but I think it's worth noting. At least in my life, if I had learned that, you know, 20 years ago, I would have done things differently than I did. I'll spare you the details of my personal life and decisions I made, but I wish, you know, my temple commanders or my temple president had, you know, had taught this essential point. The devotee, you know, his or her notion of renunciation is that of seeing matter in connection with Krishna and engaging that matter in Krishna's service. And so that verse by Rupa Goswami, you know, the founder of our tradition, Prabhupada said we should have that verse at the entrance of the BBT to remind us that we are about this, we are about Yukta Vairagya, about engaging matter in Krishna's service. And what does it mean today? It means basically engaging matter in the Sankirtan mission, in spreading Krishna consciousness. Of course, while remaining pure with our essential principles, our essential theology, our essential sadhana, no question about that. But then the sky's the limit in terms of engaging matter in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's service. So now we come to this Vidyavadu Jivanam. The Sankirtan movement, or Sankirtan, is Vidyavadu Jivanam. It says that the life of all transcendental knowledge. It's the life of all transcendental knowledge. To illustrate this, and I'm sorry to use myself as an example, but for example, I didn't prepare so much. I prepared a little because I gave the seminar some time back, but I didn't prepare so much today. So I had a choice, you know, 20 minutes, half hour before 7 o'clock, to quickly do some studying or to go to the kirtan. And I thought, I'm going to go to the kirtan because the kirtan is the life of all transcendental knowledge. Sankirtan is the life of all transcendental knowledge. The extreme example of this is the gopis. The Srimad Bhagavatam describes that the residents of Vrindavan are not very educated. Right? They don't know so many verses. Not just the gopis, any, you know, resident of Goloka Vrindavan. They're not great munis, they're not great scholars, and yet they are constantly glorifying Krishna. Constantly glorifying Krishna. As a matter of fact, the bees of Vrindavan are described to have been great munis in their past lives. In other words, if you cultivate knowledge of God for lifetimes, you may have a chance to take birth as a bee that is always flying around the garland of the Vaijayanti garland of Krishna. Right? Now, this doesn't mean also that we shouldn't take Bhakti Shastri courses and we should not have Srimad Bhagavatam class anymore. And it's funny, even Lord Chaitanya, it's described that when Lord Chaitanya's brother took sannyas, sorry for doing a detour there, just a little parenthesis about Lord Chaitanya on this point of transcendental knowledge, and still having to, you know, learn our shastras after all. When Visharup takes sannyas, Sachimata, the mother of Lord Chaitanya, becomes scared that Nimai is also going to do the same. Right? And let me remember the pastime. The father is afraid, or one of them is afraid, and they take him out of school for some time, like he doesn't go to school anymore. Because, you know, if he continues learning, especially if he associates with Advaita Acharya, they'll learn renunciation and take sannyas. And so, hold on a second. God, I'm getting it. Maybe old age is coming in a little earlier than I thought. But there's a point here. There is a point. I promise there is one. God, it's embarrassing. First day on the Vyasasana in Ljubljana temple. Let's pace that moment. Yeah. Not Harayapandit, that's the father of Lord Nityananda. Jagannath Mishra tells his wife that, listen, because she says, you know, if our son doesn't go to school, then who will marry him? Right? And then he says, don't worry, at any rate, Krishna arranges, and you know, all sorts of people who are very uneducated still get married, and people who are not educated, they don't get married. So I have no idea why I brought this up. Actually, there's not really a connection. I'm sorry, Krishna. I'm sorry, the Vaishnavas. But the point is that we should, I mean, this is obvious, like we should continue our education. Yeah, so he tells him he should continue his education. So he continues, Lord Chaitanya continues his education. It's a bad example, but the point is simple, that even though, you know, Sankirtan is the life and soul of all transcendental knowledge, it doesn't mean that all we do is necessarily only chanting. Although Haridas Thakur, that's all he did. And also we can broaden the definition of Sankirtan. Like we talked about this when we were walking to go distribute some books. You know, Sankirtan can mean distributing books. It can also mean, you know, the broader definition of congregational chanting of the holy name. And as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur claimed, it can also mean Samyak Kirtan. In other words, engaging everything in the preaching mission. That's also Sankirtan. But still, though, at the bottom of the day, at the end of the day, we can't not have kirtan. We can't not chant. We can go back to Godhead without worshiping the deity, but we can't go back to Godhead without chanting the holy name. And that's why it's interesting that Prabhupada said that of all the regulative principles that the spiritual master gives, the one to chant, you know, 16 rounds a day is the most important instruction of the spiritual master. Right? So vidya, bhakti jivana, it is a life of all transcendental knowledge. And what comes after? Anandam buddhivartanam. The life of all transcendental knowledge increases the ocean of transcendental bliss. On the way to downtown, we met one young man, one young devotee who used to live here apparently in the temple, and he was telling me how, you know, he likes to tell people, like, excuse me, do you know where is happiness? And then when they say no, he said, well, I can show you, it's right in your heart. And he said, you know, that's a good line to say, you know, when you distribute books. And I told him, okay, theoretically that sounds nice, but I don't feel comfortable saying this to people because I know in my own life I have so much moments of where I'm lamenting and, you know, on the mental platform and on the bodily platform. And so I think I would be speaking beyond my realization if I said, you know, yes, the real happiness is in the heart. So that's just a way to introduce this topic about happiness, that expanding the ocean of transcendental bliss. And I think we can have two extremes. One is to kind of have a unrealistic and beyond our realization type of speech, and tell everybody, you know, this is, yeah, it's like you're happy always, you know. The other is like, the other extreme is to say, no, you know, I've, like you hear from these great poets, you know, I've, Narottam Das Thakur, right? Everybody has gone back to the spiritual world. I haven't, or I'm not experiencing any bliss. Lord Chaitanya himself in the Shikshashtakam says, you know, Durdhaiva Midrisham Mihajanina Anuraga, I'm so unfortunate. I have no attraction for them. So I think we, as, again, as, you know, normal souls, I don't want to call all of you neophytes, but, you know, we're, I think, basically kind of beginners, unless some of us are hiding our, you know, Uttama Adhikari nature than Hare Krishna. But for most of us, I think we're kind of somewhere in between. I mean, the reason why we're still chanting after, how many years have you been chanting, Mataji? But not, don't tell it, because it will know your age, and it's very embarrassing.
It's not, I'm 41, but...
So 30
no,
years.
I haven't been chanting, I just got Mahamantra when I was 12, but then ever since 2009, I'm chanting.
Okay. How many years have you been chanting, Mataji?
10 years.
10 years. Prabhu? Come on, how many years have you been chanting? 30 years. So, you know, when you chant Hare Krishna, 16 rounds, which takes 2 hours, it's a tapasya. What does it mean? It means, it has to mean that you're experiencing at least something. Otherwise, you're crazy. You're either like totally crazy and you love pain and frustration, or you must be experiencing some param drishtva, as Krishna says in the second chapter, some higher taste, right? At the same time, let's be honest, at least I'm speaking for myself, it's, you know, not the experiences that we hear Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has, or the great acharyas. You know, we don't pray in the morning, my dear Lord Krishna, please give me 1,000 ears and 1,000 tongues, because your holy name is so sweet that I would love to hear it with 1,000 ears and 1,000 mouths. We wish we had that, but we don't. Right? Rupa Goswami, one of his famous prayers, please, I wish I had 10,000 ears and 10,000. Because, speaking of Rupa Goswami, we are jaundiced. You know, there's this disease called jaundice. Jaunice in French, where your liver kind of becomes yellow. I don't know how you call it in Slovenian. Okay. So that disease in pre-industrial North India, you cured it by doing what? By eating sugar. And what was the symptom of this disease? It's still probably the symptom today. When you have this disease, right, it tastes bitter. Sugar tastes bitter. You can't taste the sweetness of the sugar. We all know this analogy. It's in Rupa Goswami's Nectar of Instruction. But it's there for a reason. It's there for us to actually encourage us. If we're honest, we'll realize, okay, I mean, we don't have this ecstatic love of God yet. Pundarik Vidyanidhi, one of my favorite characters in Chaitanya Lila. It's one of my favorite characters because he teaches the lesson that one should not judge other devotees by how they dress. And so he was very opulent in his style, and Mukunda said to Gadadhar Pandit, who we have here in your beautiful Panchatattva deities, he said, Gadadhar, come with me, I want you to meet this great sadhu, this great bhakta. So Gadadhar said, okay. So he went with Mukunda to the house of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, a very opulent house with furniture and marble and ivory and servants and, you know, beautiful sofas. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi was sitting, the Chaitanya Bhagavat describes, on this sofa, being fanned, long black oily, you know, oil hair, eating even like betel nuts, which is a sort of a mild aphrodisiac, not to be imitated. And Gadadhar Pandit, who we believe is, you know, not different from Srimati Radharani, or maybe Srimati Radharani's shadow, it's described, but, you know, someone extremely exalted, saw Pundarik Vidyanidhi and in her mind, in his mind, thought, you know, who is this? This is a devotee? Come on. So Mukunda saw Gadadhar Pandit looking at Pundarik Vidyanidhi with this incredulous attitude, judging on based on externals. And Mukunda thought, okay, I'm going to show you. So he took the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita says that when Mukunda sang the Srimad Bhagavatam verses, he sang them very melodiously. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami says. So he took the 10th canto and he started reciting a famous verse where Shukadev Goswami glorifies how merciful Krishna is to Putana, because even though she tried to kill Krishna, he still gave her the position of mother, and therefore how merciful is Krishna. So Mukunda took this verse and started reciting it, and Pundarik Vidyanidhi was just looking away against to the wall or whatever. When he heard this, the Bhagavad describes, he started ripping his clothes apart and pulling his hair out of his head and crying, screaming. His servants had to like hold him down on the floor. It was like an epileptic fit. Why or how, what was the cause? Hearing a verse from the Bhagavatam. So are we on that level? No. But I'm sure we'll all experience that. Let's say we're at Rath Yatra, we come late for Rath Yatra, and we're kind of running, and then we hear, oh, it's over there, the kirtan's over there. And so we, you know, we have a little bit of enthusiasm in our heart. So that's, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's like we're kind of in the middle there. We cannot be too hard on ourselves and say, no, we have no taste at all, you know. We do, otherwise why are we chanting 30 years, 10 years, whatever. But do we still have jaundice? Yes. But that's okay. That's okay. Rupa Goswami says, you know, just be patient, continue taking that sugar. And just by taking the sugar, then slowly but surely, the sweetness of the sugar will manifest itself. The sweetness of the holy name, which is, we hear, very sweet. Golokera Premadana, Harinam Sankirtan, the treasure of the spirit. Can you imagine the treasure of heaven? Like where God lives with his eternal associates, the atmosphere that must be there. It's inconceivable. The amount of love, the amount of excitement, the amount of peace that must exist in this, you know, in what we call heaven, in the spiritual world, in the kingdom of God. Well, according to Narottam Das Thakur, that comes down to earth, you know, through this chanting of the holy name. I asked Indra Dumna Swami once in Poland, like, you know, we hear that it comes down like this, but, you know, we're not pure, so how are we experiencing it and how is it going through us? And he said, somehow it makes its way. Somehow it makes its way. But we can take it from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam. It ever increases the ocean of transcendental bliss. And we can finish with this. This is the difference between material happiness and spiritual happiness. Theoretically, and we have some experience, spiritual happiness has no end, right? Nitya, ananda. Whereas material happiness has a beginning and an end. And so therefore Mahaprabhu says, you know, the ever-expanding ocean of spiritual happiness. It is a life of all transcendental knowledge that increases the ocean of transcendental bliss. And it enables us to fully taste the nectar for which we are always anxious. So, deep down in our soul, deep down as jivas, we have to believe. And sometimes it's so hard to believe this, because you look at yourself and you see how attached we are to sense gratification, right? So, and we wonder, like, wait a second, this is supposed to be an artificial. It's, you know, this deep attachment to sense gratification, that's supposed to be something external to me as a soul. I still have doubts about this. Because we see how deeply rooted is our desire for material enjoyment, for being name, fame, adoration, distinction, or gross sense pleasure, you name it. That is so deeply rooted that sometimes I think, my God, is it really like something that has been just externally accumulated on top of me, but that can be actually brushed away, and that me, originally, I'm a pure loving soul who has nothing of this? So deep down, as a soul, as a jiva who's pure, desiring to connect with God, desiring to experience God's love, and desiring to give love to God, that's supposed to be our, you know, original deep down nature. And therefore, Mahaprabhu says, you know, this is what we're yearning for, hankering for. So our process, our life is about convincing ourselves again and again and again that, look, the real object of our satisfaction is God. You know, so go on dandavats.com instead of Facebook, or, you know, unless you're going on Facebook to preach and to only read about Krishna Katha. But you get my point. You know, read the Bhagavatam instead of going to see a movie, Itakodale, right? I mean, that's the principle. Pour water on the root instead of on the leaves. Because if you, you know, try to, you know, become satiated by trying to put food in your hands and not the stomach, it's a, you know, the analogy of the Bhagavatam, like you try to feed the stomach, you know, the parts of that body without feeding food to the stomach, or watering the root of the tree without, or watering the branches without watering the root, what happens? You go hungry or the tree dies. Right? So Mahaprabhu is telling us, like, you know, this chanting is what we're deeply down hankering for. The pleasure from this chanting is what we're all hankering for. So today on Narottam Das Thakur's appearance day, we can pray again to Narottam Das Thakur that, please, you know, give us this drop, you know, or continue. If we're already getting something, so okay, let us continue. Tomorrow, let me get another drop, and the day after, I'll be happy with another drop. In fact, for the rest of my life, if I can just get another drop of this higher taste of this mercy that we experience by chanting, you know, we'll be happy. And if it can increase in intensity, then great. I think we can pray to Narottam Das Thakur for this blessing. Jai. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Narottam Das Thakur ki jai. Harinam Sankirtan ki jai. ISKCON Ljubljana ki jai. Hvala. Hare Krishna. Narottam Das Thakur ki. So here's the translation. O Lord Hari, I have spent my life uselessly, having obtained a human birth and having not worshipped Radha and Krishna. I have knowingly drunk poison. This second one is a favorite quote of Indradyumna Swami. Golokera Premadana Harinam Sankirtan. The treasure of divine love in Goloka Vrindavan has descended as the congregational chanting of Lord Hari's names. Why did my attraction for that chanting never come about? Day and night my heart burns from the fire of the poison of worldliness, and I have not taken the means to relieve it. Verse 3, Lord Krishna, who is the son of the king of Braj, became the son of Sachi, and Balaram became Nitai. The holy name delivered all those souls who were lowly and wretched. The two sinners, Jagai and Madai, are evidence of this. And finally, the fourth one, O Lord Krishna, O son of Nanda, accompanied by the daughter of Rishabhanu, please be merciful to me. Narottam Das says, maybe we can all say, O Lord, please do not push me away from your reddish lotus feet. For who is my beloved except for you? Jai. Narottam Das Thakur ki jai. Speaking of Narottam Das Thakur, I remember on Narottam Das Thakur's appearance day in Vrindavan several years ago, at Narottam Das Thakur's temple, there was a festival organized by Indrajumna Swami and other devotees. And I'll always remember Danudar Maharaj. You may remember Danudar Maharaj. He doesn't come to Europe so much. He's an American sannyasi, a Prabhupada disciple. He mentioned, he was giving a talk, and he said, on these days, such as today, for example, when Narottam Das Thakur appeared, or the day when Prabhupada appeared, or Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, or, you know, all our acharyas, on these days, there's like special channels that open up for like 24 hours between us and these divine personalities. And there's even a letter where Prabhupada says about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on his appearance day, today you can pray to him directly. Like, you don't have to, you know, pray through the parampara today. Like, so it's just like an open market on these days. Like, these personalities are directly accessible. And so on these days, we should really make it a point to pray to them. Guru Kripa, you know, Vaishnav Kripa, please free me from lust, please free me from anger, please free me from envy, please free me from, you know, all the undesirable things that we see in the mirror of our consciousness. And please bless me that I can engage in your service purely and lovingly and humbly, assist you in the Sankirtan mission, or assist the Lord in the Sankirtan mission. So today on Narottam Das Thakur's appearance day, we can do that. We can pray to Narottam Das Thakur, please, and give us a drop of mercy. In case some of us who don't know, the song we sing every day, right? Lokana Lokera Jivana, it's written by Narottam Das Thakur. So he's praying to Lokanath Goswami. I remember now the story of, speaking of Lokanath Goswami, Narottam Das Thakur used to clean the area where his spiritual master used to respond to nature's call. He would do it quietly, discreetly after. And then after some weeks or days, his guru realized, well, this place is always clean. And he hid and he saw, you know, Narottam doing this for him. And Narottam Das Thakur was one of the first book distributors, we can also say, right? There's this whole story of how the original writings of the Goswamis were stolen by King Birhambir. Do you know the story? Briefly, Narottam Das Thakur was, along with Shamananda Pandit and a third, with Srinivas Acharya, they were the three scholarly disciples of Jiva Goswami in Vrindavan, and then Jiva Goswami sent them to preach in different parts. But I think Narottam was the one who went to Manipur. He preached in Manipur. And I forget now if he was part of the story of the recovery of the books with the king. Was he also part of that story, or was it Shamananda and Srinivas Acharya? At any rate, to be safe, for sure he went to Manipur and preached there. And the whole state of Manipur, which is, you know, a state in north east northwest India, became basically a Vaishnava state by the preaching of Narottam Das Thakur. Narottam Das Thakur organized the first Mayapur festival. And yesterday, devotees went to Mayapur, we heard. So Narottam Das Thakur was responsible for organizing this sort of first large-scale Vaishnava Sangha with Janava, the wife of Nityananda, and all the other great Vaishnavas who are still, you know, alive. And it's described that during their kirtan on that festival, you know, the entire Panchatattva manifested and danced with them. We don't want to talk about the disappearance of Narottam Das Thakur, but we understand that, you know, all the pastimes of our acharyas are transcendental. And even though today's the appearance day, like Prabhupada says, appearance and disappearance of a great acharya is the same. So I personally love how Narottam Das Thakur left this world. You know why there's no samadhi of Narottam Das Thakur? Because his body melted. When he decided that I'm done, I'm going back to the spiritual world, he asked his disciples to accompany him into the Ganga, and he told them, okay, now pour water on my head, like bathe me with Ganga water. And it's described, as they were bathing him, his body melted into milk. And so as the body of Narottam Das Thakur melted into milk, devotees, you know, took a container and took that milk. And that's why you still have the Dhut Samadhi of Narottam Das Thakur. In other words, a mausoleum where there was that milk of his body, right? Psychologically, just put yourself into the mind of that disciple. Because, you know, you're supposed to follow the order of the guru, and yet you obviously don't want to be the instrument in having your guru disappear from your sight. So imagine the cognitive dissonance in the mind of that disciple who was probably crying, you know, the order is there, I have to continue, but as he's continuing, his spiritual master is disappearing. These are transcendental emotions, we believe, right? What distinguishes the bhakti tradition from the Mayavadi tradition, from the Advaita Vedantist tradition, is that we accept and we even admire and aspire to and even worship pure transcendental emotions of love that exist between the soul and other souls and the soul and God and God and the soul. These emotions, we believe, are real. They're not illusory. They're not to be discarded. And we, as, you know, neophyte practitioners, we want to purify our emotions, spiritualize them, not negate them, but purify them, so that what's left, nitya siddha krishna prema sadhya kabunai, what's left is, well, our original pure spiritual emotions, right?